This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning, Taranaki, and welcome back to Making Yourself at Home here at 104.4 FM. Access Radio Taranaki, your voice, your choice. Here in the studio, we've got myself, Brian, from the United States, Clarissa from Argentina, our special guest, Lucia from Argentina also, and our other host, Clara from Spain.
Thank you, Ryan. Welcome, everyone. Yeah, I'm really happy to have Lucia here at the studio. She's a friend of mine. And also today we have like three Spanish speakers in the show. So Brian was a little bit worried that we might start to talk in Spanish all of a sudden.
Yo aprender español, yo habla poquito.
Ah, perfect. Muy bien, muy bien, muy bien. So let's introduce Lucia. As Brian told, Lucia is from Argentina and she moved to New Zealand in 2018, searching for a new life adventure. She first arrived to Christchurch, where she already knew someone there, and then she moved to New Plymouth in 2020. Lucia is originally an architect designer and a project manager, and she was doing this sort of work until she had her son. And since then, almost 2 years ago, she has started a new project where she shares her experiences, learnings, and reflections about motherhood. Welcome, Lucia. How are you today?
Hi, thank you. I'm good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to have a chat with you all and, yeah, share my experiences. Thank you.
Yeah, somewhere we usually start the show is having our guests describe the process of moving to New Zealand from wherever they're coming from. And I like to get an understanding of what inspired the travel, what inspired the big move, if there's a background that kind of lit that fire in you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was first in Australia doing a working holiday, and I think it was 2015, and finished my working holiday, went back to Argentina, and I wasn't really ready for settling, and I wanted to search for a new adventure and a new place to go. And yeah, I knew someone who was in New Zealand, so I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a go and go to New Zealand. So I came with a working holiday, but I always came with the feeling that I was going to stay longer. I kind of, inside my heart, I knew I was going to like it here and I was going to stay. So I kind of, you know, did a bit of a closure back home in Argentina. I left, you know, everything, apartment, work, and, you know, got ready and came for a new adventure. So, yeah, I kind of, it has been a, you know, a bit of a long story, as, you know, possibly everyone who moved to New Zealand, visas, work, and all of the process. But, yeah, everything worked out, and, yeah, I'm here now.
Had you traveled much in South America before?
A little bit. Not so much, but I went to Colombia, a little bit in Chile, then Brazil, a little bit in Bolivia, Peru, yeah. Just a little bit, like small trips, nothing very big. Yeah.
Hi, it's Clarissa. Thank you for having me in the show again. Hi, Lucia.
Hello.
I met Lucia when I first arrived to Taranaki, so I know her since February last year. And I want to ask, because I'm from Argentina as well, if we go back to 2015, how did you find out about the working holiday visa in Australia? Because I remember by the time, it was not very well known, the visas and the work and holidays.
Yeah.
And just something that clicked on my mind asking that question.
Yeah, well, actually, I had a friend from uni, and then she was really keen to go to Australia. And I kind of didn't really know much about it. And we were talking about it in a weekend away with friends and at night. And then, I don't know, it's just kind of conversations that kind of stay there, but then we started talking about it more serious, and then I was like, yeah, why not? It was interesting because I'm always being like a person from, you know, from my own place, from Argentina, and then I always kind of went traveling and came back. I have a big family over there, so I never saw myself kind of going away for a long time. And then, we started talking. I got like super excited. We got all ready to go and like jump into this adventure. And then another friend from uni also came with us. It was like a whole kind of world opening for me. I think it wasn't really well known by then, like the Australia visas and like everything. I think New Zealand was more like a popular one, but Australia not so much. That was quite interesting to research and see all of the process and get there.
Amazing.
And when you first arrived to New Zealand, what were your first impressions about the life here?
many. Like I found many differences from Argentina. I think what impressed me the most was like the life connected with nature. I come from a big city called Cordoba, and you know, it's more like, you know, big cities, lots of concrete and big roads, and then in here it was just, it's so much green and the ocean, you know, like pretty much everywhere in New Zealand you have the ocean, or the ocean is only a few hours of a drive away. And for me that was like, you know, it was such an impact in like, I could go to the ocean every day. I love the ocean, but I grew up like in it, like 15 hours away from the ocean. So like
15 hours away.
Yeah,
wow.
Like very, very far away.
I thought I grew up far from the ocean and it's 5 hours only.
So that was quite a big, like a beautiful thing that I like absorbed straight away. I think also some, like the weather, I found it a little bit too cold. I arrived just before winter starting. So that was quite an adaptation for myself, because I come from a very sunny, warm place, and then I arrived to Christchurch, end of April, into a very cold house. So that was a big change. And then adapting to the culture, and quite a change, I would say, like culturally as well.
Do you find like a slower life here? Because I remember the hustle and bustle, chaotic Cordoba to Christchurch, being like kind of like super quiet, super calm.
Yeah.
Everything felt more slow. I don't know, more relaxed as well.
Yeah, totally. And like even driving around, you know, like you have to drive and it's not, even the peak time is not as as busy as, you know, like standard time. So yeah, it was like a nice kind of like slowing down, and then lots of walks on the beach, and yeah, it's like another rhythm totally. I think you know, like big cities have lots of things happening. I think I was also living in Christchurch in Sumner, which is like close to the ocean, and then yeah, it's like a very, it's like a little village in a way, so you kind of walk around and get to know people, and yeah, and also something nice, like I was going for walks in the ocean, and every day you will see kind of like the same people and you will start saying hello, and I found that like so nice. Even here, like I go for walks and people just say hi, and it's so nice, because I'm from a big town, you're a bit of like an anonymous person. You don't really say hello to the people you're crossing, like while you're walking or cycling. You just, you know, just keep going. It's just people coming and going. But in here, it feels, because maybe there's much less people. It's, I don't know. It's mm-hmm. there's more of a connection in that way.
Mm. Yeah, I know that when I noticed that also when I compare here with Spain. Like in Spain, you will say hello to the people that you know, but yeah, not as here. Like you say hi with everyone that you cross if you are walking along the beach, for example.
Yeah.
What part of Argentina are you from, Clarissa?
I'm from Alto de Chipión, but okay. It's in the Córdoba province.
Okay.
So I studied in Córdoba and lived in Córdoba city for nearly 10 years when I studied at university.
Mm.
So I was in that chaotic place. But the town where I'm from It's a 2,000 people town. It's super small.
Super small.
And it's like what you said. You walk on the street, people say hi. That's why I like to live here in Taranaki, because it made me feel at home.
It's very similar to where you grew up. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, with 78,000 people more, but yeah.
Yeah, it's still fairly small place, I would say, here, right?
Yeah, and then we have a big community of Spanish speakers and people from Argentina, and the Latin community is big, and the multi-ethnic community is big as well. So that is also, for me, something like that adds into the experience to live here overseas, but feeling at home.
Yeah, it's really incredible just what a small place like New Plymouth and Taranaki has to offer. In terms of the culture and the multi-ethnic community for such a small place. It's a really special situation here.
Yeah.
Wherever you go, it's fascinating how you can hear, like, so many different languages. Like, people speaking in one language, and they're, like, so many. The other day, I was in a playground, and I think I heard, like, maybe four different languages in, like, the first 20 minutes. It was amazing. Like, I don't really get that in, you know, back in Argentina or in Cordoba, like, you have people from Argentina, but in here it's just like from different countries. Like, everyone has different stories how they came here, and they like having a life here. I find that, like, you know, like very, very special.
It gives us plenty of people to talk to on the program.
I was just thinking that too, that that's what we experience every Monday here. Listening to stories from people all over the world that have chosen to live here in New Plymouth.
So what year did you arrive in Taranaki, and can you tell us a bit about that move and adjustment to from kind of the smaller feeling Christchurch to an even smaller, closer community here?
So I came here, it was 2020. I was working in Christchurch in the company where I was working closed down, so I had to, you know, find another job, but I had a work visa, but then it was just in the middle of COVID, so there wasn't, like, it wasn't that easy at that time. So I got a job in New Plymouth, got a new visa, and then I was like, okay, here I go. I just put everything I had on my car and and drove from Christchurch to here in like a day and a half. I was starting a new job. It was quite a change. And then, it was pretty, I'd say I found it a little bit difficult, to be honest, because in Christchurch I had a little bit of community. I had some friends. I would say mainly all of them, most of them from overseas. And then I didn't really knew anyone here in New Plymouth. So, got here, and then I met, straight away from friends in common, I met my partner. And he was like the only person I knew by then. So, you know, starting like meeting people, it was the middle of winter, like sort of COVID time. So there wasn't like much social things happening. So I found it quite a difficult change, you know, to put roots down and to feel like that I was home. It was like a few months, I would say more like towards summer, when, you know, sun was out and people started to show up, you know, to be like, okay, there's people. I realized like there's more people here. It took me a little bit of time, and I think I still sometimes miss my friends in Christchurch, but because they are all from overseas, most of them have kind of like left. Some of them have left New Zealand. I mean, all of them pretty much. I think if I would be there, I'd be missing them anyway. So I think it was quite a change, I think.
And once the sun came out and people started coming out, what did you find to enjoy here?
I was enjoying lots, like the beach. I'm a really beach person, as I said before, so I was like going to the ocean a lot, and then, you know, met these people that from Argentina, and then so like we were kind of having lots of like catch-ups at the beach by then, and then having, you know, drinking mate, and it felt like more like my place, my home, because we were like a group of people rather than just like one people here, one people there at the beach. We were like, okay, all catching up together, and, you know, like chatting, and it just felt like more like my culture. That's what we do. We just get all together and go here, go there. And that felt like really, really nice. I started feeling more connected, you know, like feeling like I could share with people. I wasn't feeling so lonely. So that was kind of like a big change. Yeah.
And what traditions from Argentina do you keep at your home here in
besides drinking mate?
And how often do you drink mate? Like, do you, it's something like you drink it every day, and what time of the day does it replace coffee for you? I am always just wondering that also.
Yeah, well, I drink it pretty much every day, like in the mornings. I try not to drink too light because otherwise I get too awake, because it does give you a bit of energy. I don't think it's as much as coffee. Coffee is more like a peak of energy, and then mate, I feel, is more like sustained. So yeah, I mainly drink it in the morning, but I try to not drink too much coffee, but I kind of like to have something that wakes me up. So I try to some days not drink coffee and I have some mates, and then, you know, to kind of like replace that, yeah, pretty much every day. And then, yeah, other things that I keep from my home, I think this is, you know, I find like back home we all sit around the table and have like, you know, these meals and then chat for like a long time after. We call it sobremesa, which I don't know if it has an actual translation to English, but
I don't think so. I was looking for that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a translation for that in English.
Well,
unless Brian can correct us.
But it's like
he knows about it.
Oh, do you?
Do you know a word for that? Like what you do when you finish having a meal? In our cultures, normally you stay chatting for very long once the food is finished.
We would just call it an after dinner conversation.
Yeah, it's exactly what Google says.
Yeah.
So we have a word for that in Spanish. Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of like a big thing that we do over there. You just have like a meal, and then you get like you stay seated and keep chatting, and no one leaves the table. It's kind of like slightly rude.
And it's beyond that, because like if you're having a meal on a lunchtime on a Saturday, Sunday, you start with the starters. You wait for the asado, then the barbecue is bringing in. You have the food, can be meat or no meat. If you're vegetarian, you can have a vegetables barbecue. And then, you know, we have the meal, everyone eats around the table, and then we take the plates out and we stay there talking. And then desserts come in and we stay there talking. And then we remove all the plates from dessert. It's already like, what, 3 p.m.? And then someone brings the mate and we stay there.
Talking. Yeah, lots of
ketchup. And then it's like more food, and then we have merienda, which is a meal between, usually, right?
Yeah.
Between lunch
like an afternoon
and dinner.
Tea kind of
thing. Yeah, afternoon tea, I think.
And sometimes it extends until night. Like, I found my family having super long after dinner or lunch chats for, like, going from lunch to dinner. And still, like, the sobremesa forever.
I know. Yeah, it's very, very long. I don't keep it that long. But there's something that I really enjoy. It's just that, you know, there's something very special about sharing food with family or with friends when you're like sitting all together. And then, you know, it's not only about the food. It's also about like the sharing and the company. And I find in general in New Zealand, there's not too much of that. Like people will just like get up and leave, and sometimes I will be eating, like still having my meal, and then some people will be like picking up the plates and like starting making dishes while others are eating. I find that really, I don't know, it's very different, because, you know, we don't do it that way. It's like a, you know, like you kind of stay until the last person finish eating, you stay seated in the table, then you stay for longer. And that's something that, you know, my partner is like, he was usually like getting up and, you know, like starting the dishes, and I'd be like, but I'm still eating. And we have to chat after the meal.
So your partner's Kiwi?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He's from New Zealand, but half South African, but he was born here in New Zealand. But yeah, he doesn't really have this concept, and that's something that I'm bringing home. But we're still working through.
I can totally relate to that, and that's a conversation I had with my partner, who is Kiwi, just this weekend, last weekend, about like explaining what sobremesa means and how, if I am still eating in Spain or in Argentina, you don't just keep doing other things, you wait until everyone is finished. So yeah, I can relate so much to that, like sharing that part from our culture to Kiwis. Yeah,
totally. And I think another thing that I'm trying to like bring from my culture is like the Sundays, the family Sundays. Well, I mean, especially I come from a big family, so every Sunday we will get all together. It will be like, you know, 30 people having lunch. So it's, yeah, 30 or more or less, you know, around that number. And then, yeah, we will be like eating and having conversations the whole day long. And then in here, because I don't really have my family, it feels like it's, you know, Sundays can be sometimes a little bit empty in a way. Like, so we try at home to, you know, make something that is like a family plan, even if it's just us three or with friends, but to feel like, you know, it's like a day to slow down and there's not too much rush, and then we wake up without, you know, rush to get out, or unless it's a beautiful day. But, you know, it's like a family day. We just try to spend it together and, make it like a special kind of time.
That sounds beautiful. Yeah, to keep that tradition and bring it here.
If we could rewind a bit, because there might be some listeners who don't know what mate is, or yerba mate.
Yes.
I started drinking mate 10 years ago after a visit to Chile, and I still drink it pretty much every day. I have a coffee morning and then 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock mate habit. So yeah, if you could just describe to listeners who may not know what mate is.
Yeah, sure. So mate is a drink, it's a traditional drink from South America, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, I think, mainly.
Uruguay takes lots of pride in their mate.
Okay. Yeah, Uruguay too. So it's a herbal, it's sort of like a herbal tea that you put in a cup, and it could be like a wood cup or different materials, and then there's like a steel straw, so you put the herbs, which is called the yerba, and then you put hot water, sort of like warm water. So there's one person who will be like preparing the mate, which we call the person like cebador. So it's the person who will put in the water in the cup, in the mate, and then passing it around. So like, let's say if you're with a group of friends, you go like in a round, and then so one person will drink the mate, then give it back to the cebador, put more water, and then give it to the other person. So it's like, it's about the drink, but it's a lot about the, you know, the sharing.
It's like a ritual.
Like a ritual and what happens around it. It's like, I find it similar to coffee here. You know, when someone comes to your house for a visit, you might offer, like, would you like a coffee? Would you like a tea? But for us, it's mainly like, would you like mate? We just make mates, and then we sit there, and then we take mate with us everywhere we go. We go to the park, we take the mate. We go for a road trip, take the mate. And then it's like a this sort of, like, tradition and the warmth. And, you know, you usually eat something with it, you know, some pastry or some bread. And then, yeah, you just chat, and you can have mates for, you know, for hours, and then keep warming up the water again. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's like a very kind of get together thing. Yeah.
And is it easy to find mate here to buy, or do you have to bring it from home when you visit?
The yerba, yes, there's a place where you can find it in Auckland, and they said it. I think in New Plymouth there were some places where you could find it.
The mates.
Yeah. I don't know if they still have it.
I've been yesterday.
It's great now because
you can buy it.
I think it's getting more global, and because there are, you know, people everywhere around the world, you know, like from South American migrants, and then it just keeps kind of extending to other people as well, but not from South America, like you.
Pachamama, is that where you get your
mate? Yeah.
That's where you want. Do you have a favorite brand?
Yeah, I like Playadito.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the one that you can find easily
everywhere.
Here, which is
I don't really like it.
Oh, no.
But I drink it. But yeah, it's the one you can find everywhere. Like if you go.
I'm not sure
why, it's everywhere. Yeah.
I've got a bag of that. It'll be my first time drinking Playadito.
Ah, yeah.
I really enjoy Rosamonte.
Rosamonte.
Yeah, it's a smoked.
Yeah, I find it quite strong.
I like it.
I like Kraus.
Oh yeah.
It's organic and it's very good.
It's got
especially
good.
When you get, because what happened with mate is because it brews on the go, the tea that you need to settle for 5 minutes or whatever, and then you drink it mate, you pour the water and it brew on the go while you drink it. It can get like quite acid sometimes because the yerba mate is.
Ah, because it stays there for long. Okay.
Yeah, if you pour the water and wait for a bit too long, it gets super bitter and acid.
Mm-hmm.
So I find with the Kraus, Sherpa Mate Kraus, that doesn't happen.
It stays
nice
and smooth,
it's better for my
suave.
For my tummy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Drinks.
Nice to learn all those things about mate. And this had made me think about, I remember when I went to Argentina, I was amazed about like all the difference when you go to a restaurant, all the different options that you have to order meat, like the different cuts that you can order. And at the beginning, I was a kid at the time when I visited Argentina. I was always asking like, what's the difference between this and the other? How do you find like buying meat if you do eat meat here, like in New Zealand? Are you able to get like all the different types that you have in Argentina or?
Well, I was a vegetarian for quite a few years, which is a bit ironic for an Argentinian. I mean, just, you know, since for a few years. And then so my first time in New Zealand, I wasn't really eating meat. And then I started eating meat not long ago. I think when I got pregnant, I was like dreaming about meat, like having these crazy dreams. And I was like, okay, right, I'm not a vegetarian anymore. I'm going to have meat. But we don't actually like buy too much. I think the budget has to be, it's, you know, can be quite limited sometimes with meat in here, I find it, which in Argentina, I find it is much more accessible. So yeah, we kind of really like get mince into things with mince, like burgers. So you know, like big sort of bolognese full of vegetables, and so yeah, I can't say much about
meat. Prices have gone up significantly over the past 6 months.
I know, it's crazy.
Mm.
Yeah, my son, who's almost 2 years old, he is really into meat. He's a very Argentinian kid, so he's the lucky one. So we get like lots of meat. For him, you know, like steaks. So I just go to the supermarket and see, okay, what's in special? And that's what I get for him. Mainly.
Being from Argentina, you should know and have experienced inflation also.
Yes,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, and it's not a fun one.
No.
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 Yeah, totally. It's like changing a lot in here. So it's amazing. I can actually see some similarities from like in New Zealand these past 2 years to Argentina, I mean, like, you know.
Despite the differences, the
big
differences.
Big difference, but yeah, like small things, and I'm like, oh no, not this again. Like inflation mainly, and how kind of start sort of like slowly affecting your decisions and, you know, your everyday life. I find it interesting.
I think. That's everywhere now with the inflation situation. I'm working on a project and book about all of that. So it's very at the front of my mind, the whole inflation and financial situation that's happening.
Talking about books and projects, tell us about your project, about motherhood.
Creciendo con Luli? Con Luli, is that the name?
Yes. Creciendo con Luli, which means growing with... I always liked writing. I've been always like into writing, but I never shared anything I wrote. I just wrote for myself my whole life. And then when I and I'm always being a big reader as well. So when I got pregnant, I started like reading and researching lots about, you know, development, like anything you can think of. So I was finding kind of my books and my you know, my learnings since pregnancy. And yeah, and then I had my baby and I kind of kept into that, and I made it, you know, I think we're making it quite conscious as we can with my partner. And and then, yeah, I felt like I wanted to, like, in a way, share what I was learning from all of these books. It's kind of started because I was reading heaps and then thinking, like, wow, these books are amazing. And then I thought so many people, you know, don't really have the time or, you know, the interest to read all of these books. So, you know, so I thought, well, maybe I can somehow, you know, share all of these, you know, learnings and readings that I'm doing, and then making it more like real in the sense that I'm applying all of this, you know, in raising my boy. So yeah, I kind of like starting like writing and putting all of this together, and it took me actually some time to, you know, find the confidence to put it out. So it started only, I don't know, maybe like 2 months ago. I've been like writing for quite some time, but I just, maybe 2 months ago, I started with like a Substack where I create a post and then I just kind of have a subject and I write about it. And then, yeah, I have an Instagram where I kind of like share like very small part of the Substack and then link it to it. So, yeah, it's interesting navigating that as well, because I'm working on the non-attachment to any outcomes, which is, you know, sometimes a thing when you... when you start sharing, you know, what you think, what you write, and then I put myself quite, you know, out there, feel quite vulnerable. But then at the same time, I try to really work on why I'm doing it, rather than like, okay, you know, like, it doesn't matter how many people read it. It doesn't matter, like, you know, whoever reads it, hopefully they get something out of it. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing now.
And I am curious, what was your last Substack topic, or the main topic from your last thing you published and you shared?
Yeah, it was about co-sleeping and how we got to co-sleep, because it wasn't originally our plan. And I kind of read a lot about the benefits of sleeping with your child, but I wasn't quite there when my son was born. And then it just kind of started happening because I was desperate for some sleep. And then my baby wasn't sleeping much. So he was sleeping good with me. So I was, you know, in him for a few hours of sleep. And then, you know, we made it like, I started researching how to make it safely. And then, I just found lots of information that was kind of based on fear, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't do it because of this, because of that. It could be dangerous. But then I just felt like it was the right thing to do. And then I kept kind of reading. And then I just found so many, like, good, you know, good aspects for the babies and child's development. And even for myself and for the relationship. And I also loved it. So I kind of, you know, I wanted to share that with others and say, you know, this is actually really good, you know, if it is for the family dynamics, because I know it's not for everyone. But that was like my, just kind of wanted to share how kind of came to us in a way, like my son kind of made it happen. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so kind of that's what I wrote last. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Evolutionarily speaking, I don't know if there's much history of putting babies into another room and having them sleep through the night when we were living in caves or...
Exactly, yeah. And I think when you read about it, it's also such a cultural thing, because there are cultures that they always sleep with their babies. It's not like it's not a question they ask. It's not a debate, but it's a big debate, and they're quite divisive sometimes, and more like in the Western culture. But yeah, I just find it, for me, it was such a new thing, because back home, I don't know, it's not very common to do co-sleeping. You just, you know, have your baby for a few months in a cot close to, you know, parents' bed, and then baby's in its own room. So yeah, like for me, it was such a new thing. And when you started reading and also feeling how I was feeling and my baby was feeling, I was like, yeah, this totally makes sense. It's not that as strange as I thought, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it's a really nice project for people that might be experiencing similar things, because you are combining what you have learned from reading plenty of books plus your own personal experience, so adding that personal touch. I think we will share the link when we share your post on social media for people to be able to follow up.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. See, you know, I just created, like, you know, and thought, let's see if anyone resonates with this, then perfect.
Yeah.
And it's great because not all the people will be in the same situation, because every family, every couple, every child is different. But it's good for the ones who resonate with, because you don't feel alone. Sometimes happen, I'm not a mom, but I have a lot of friends that they are moms. And sometimes happen, like, for example, giving birth at home is something that in Argentina, if you say to someone, I'm going to have my child at home, they are like, no, that is wrong, you know, and that cannot happen. You have to go to the hospital. And then you talk to other person that has been doing that, and someone shares experience and be like, it's safe, it's good, it's not for everyone, because it depends on the child position and how you are and how much you dilate and everything and blah, blah. But it's good for those and put it out, the words, for someone to know that that happened to someone else and someone else is going through the same.
Yeah.
In this case, it can be co-sleeping, can be something different, but it's great. So I admire you, because it's quite brave what you're doing. You're putting yourself there, is such a vulnerable thing. You're exposing yourself to interpretation, which can be different. Like, we all might have read the same book and have different ideas about, but you put in there, which is great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's quite an exciting thing, and it definitely I go through, you know, up and down sometimes. I'm like, oh, you know, like do I write about this? Because I've tried to keep it, you know, like, sort of like easy, but, you know, sometimes I'm like, I get writing, I get so passionate. And then I'm like, okay, how am I going actually to share this? I'm just going to delete this and this.
Yeah, and then it's like, you realize someone is going to read it.
So it's a working, you know, work about, for myself, it's work of, like, you know, letting go and say, like, okay, this is just me. And then whatever happens after, try to, like, let it go.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm also curious, because you have another project together with your partner, Kyle. Can you tell us about that one too?
Yes. Yeah, lots of projects. We are, lots of creation at the moment at home. And my partner, he's an artist. He's an artist, and he does lots of illustration. And then he's not at the moment working as an illustrator. So he works at the museum, and he's always been kind of trying, creating outside work and trying to find, you know, a place where to put all of his, like, creativity and ideas. So we started this a studio called Hajoy Studio, and then where we started, like, originally, like, a screen printing studio for, like, t-shirts. So he designed the t-shirts, and then it was mainly kids' t-shirts, and we started maybe, like, 2 years ago. And now it kind of, we're sort of like transitioning to more like an illustration company. I mean, that's kind of my issue. He does the design, I say we, but he does the design, and I just give my opinion and then do the paperwork. And so we, at the moment, we're doing, like, collaborations with, like, like-minded business, you know, like local business. You know, we did one with Below, where Kai created this particular design inspired, you know, on, like, what happens at Below in the bakery. And then, you know, from that, he created, like, a special design for, like, t-shirts and then murals and coloring books. And then that's kind of, then we started working with all the companies. We're, like, very kind of keen to create this, like, sort of, like, fun designs and very special, like, specific for that place and what happens in the business, you know, like the little easy container is another one. And
I saw that one, the little easy container. It's super nice, the design. Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, thank you. It was, yeah, it's fun. And it's interesting, because you see, for example, these designs, And there's such a process behind them. Like, it takes quite some time. But yeah, it's a beautiful process because, you know, like, you know, Kyle goes and see how they do it, see what they do, and then, you know, gets like all of these inspirations and start drawing. And then, you know, you kind of have, you know, kind of backs and forth, and then kind of like comes to life. So yeah, that's kind of what we're doing, like the illustration and designing, and then yeah, see from there where it goes. Like, we're really looking to growth, to grow, you know, like somehow. So designing more and creating, and yeah, kind of seeing.
If someone wants to get in touch with you and Kyle to explore having a design made for them, where can they find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we have an Instagram at the moment, which is Hahoy Studio. And then we have an email address as
okay.
well. So maybe I can...
Yeah, share with us,
yeah.
and then we will share on our social media too, for people to know how to reach out to you.
Yeah.
So we are closely coming to the end of our program today. And normally we ask our guests one last question. Brian, do you want to go with that one?
So, yeah, if you would be giving advice to a friend that was moving to Taranaki or any new place in the world, far from home, what kind of advice would you give them on how to settle in to make themselves at home in a new place?
I think I would say, like, to not have too many expectations first. I think what I found in my personal experience, it took me some time to settle, but I always had this expectation that I was going to go to a new place and feel like, okay, this is my new home straight away. And because it didn't happen, I think I found it quite hard at times because I had this expectation like things would be easy because, you know, like I have life experience or whatever. Like, I just, you know, I just go and I, you know, and I feel, you know, completely at home. But I think it takes a little bit of time, and I think patience and you know, like, kind of going with the flow, you know, not so much like, okay, I gotta be happy, I gotta find this, I gotta, you know, find community straight away. Sometimes some things take a little bit more of time, and being okay with that, you know, with the ups and downs and the time that, you know, will take, that's okay. I think once you accept that it, you know, it's time you're living far away from your own culture, from your own family or whatever circumstances, then, you know, sometimes it can take a little bit longer of what you would like, you know, to kind of feel that you're really settled in a place. And then also something important is to really try to participate in the community and the cultural events happening, like, as much as possible, to, you know, to start meeting people. I think, like, the community and meeting people is the most important that would make you feel home in a new place. So at the beginning, you know, can be hard when you arrive to a new place and you don't know many people, but, you know, the more that you start knowing people, the more you're going to find your people, and that's going to make you feel more at home. So, yeah.
Cool. I only have one question to closing. If you need to choose one thing, despite wherever you are, what makes you feel at home? What is something that you say, like, oh, I'm at home?
Oh,
I know it's a hard one.
Yeah. But I think community. Right. Yeah, community, definitely. People that you feel like are kind of like your family, because that's what that makes you grounded, really, you know. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, community. So thank you so much for joining us today, Lucia. It was wonderful to hear your stories. Thank you, Clarissa, also, for being with us, co-hosting. Alina, we missed you today. Alina couldn't come. But yeah, so that was everything for today. See you next Monday, 11 a.m. at Access Radio. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
See you, Taranaki.
See ya. Thank you. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.